are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test. Oh, my God, it's early.
Weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Get ready. We're going to kick back with some weekend jumpstart tunes, country flavored today. Free flow pop culture combo, the inspiration to action challenge, success stories, and your weekend picks coming up from movies, TV, and video. Get you in the mix too if you're listening live. It is Friday, June 5th, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. Hey, please don't forget about our 24/7 Twitter feed. So whether you're listening live or on podcast, you can chime in about anything and everything when it's convenient for you at AB Rights. The show today being brought to you in part by City Mobile. You can shop from almost anywhere with City Mobile. And also by Kellogg's. Wake up, breakfast is waiting. So we're going to enter the music realm and welcome back one of our fan faves, the country cowboy. Doug Briney joins us. He'll update us on his latest exploits in Nashville and beyond. First, though, let's listen to his latest effort, another charitable song, this one to raise awareness for Parkinson's disease. It's simply called Parkinson's Song. Doug Briney opening up a very busy Friday edition of the Amy Goodman Show.
Well, I got me a little problem I'll try to explain to you. I hope when I'm done, you'll see me with eyes brand new. People, they stare at me as down the lane I go. They see me shaking, and I can hardly walk. But it gets me so angry, it gets me so mad. But please don't you judge me, I know I shake a lot. Shake a little sometimes, someday I won't even walk. I even have trouble some days just trying to talk.
Cowboy himself. Hey, Doug Briney, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on this new song.
Well, thank you very much, Amy, and it's great to be back on with you.
Always a pleasure. You're noted for your great music, your work ethic, and also a lot of charitable efforts. I know we were on with you some months back when you were unveiling your song about soldiers and your charity effort for that.
Yes.
How did you get involved with the Parkinson's people?
Well, I got a good friend. That song was co-written with a gentleman by the name of Howie Garuch. And Howie is a good friend of mine, and he has Parkinson's disease. about 5-6 years ago, he was living in Oregon at the time and was on a bus, and he was having a particularly bad Parkinson's day. And the listeners and y'all know anything about bad Parkinson's days, it means he was shaking quite a bit, uncontrollably, and just having a very hard time with that. And there were two young men at the back of the bus. Now Howie looks a little rough, but two young men at the back of the bus were kind of laughing and pointing his direction, say, check that dude out. He needs his, you know, that dude needs a fix really bad. It upset him pretty bad. But then later on, at a different bus stop, mother and her child were there, and the mother says, see, honey, that's why you don't do drugs, talking to him. And it just really upset him to no end, understandably. And he wrote a very angry poem, about that. I took that poem and rewrote it. I felt like I kept the frustration with it, but toned it down quite a bit. And then I gave it the resolution at the end that if you just take some time to get to know me, you'll find there's a lot more than what meets the eye. So that's how it came about. I was taking a poem that Howie had written probably about 4 years ago, putting that more into a song format and keeping the frustration, but not so angry. No explicatives that he had.
Well, you kept it more palatable so people would listen to it, because if it's really angry, then that doesn't. People turn around,
correct.
Turn away.
You know, it does.
That's a great thing you did for your friend.
Frustration.
It's a great thing you did for your friend and for the world. To get it out there.
That's
someone like Michael J. Fox is someone who, you know, when he comes on television and when he doesn't take his medication, and it makes people uncomfortable, but they see what he goes through, you know, and you do see it. And
that's right.
The more
that's
you see
right.
of people,
right.
the more you are accustomed to it and you get used to it. And you can face it with greater empathy, I think. So, and it's a song really that, because of the empathy, can transcend just Parkinson's to any kind of difference that people have, and people judging somebody just what
that's
they look
right.
like, or what you think they're going through, when it may be something totally different. So, really, kudos to
totally
you for doing
different.
That, and I think you're going to bring a lot of awareness to a lot of people.
Well,
and you tend to do that. You have go ahead.
Yeah. I was just to say, well, thank you, and we're really excited about it. The National Parkinson's Foundation picked that song up as their theme song, and they were just thrilled with it because they had been looking for a while and trying to find something that they could use, and so they're going to be using that in their advertising campaigns and different things. We gave them the song to use in the way that they wanted to, so we're very excited about it.
Really, really nice and really generous. You have that great generous spirit that I know you've always had since we first talked a while ago now, when you were first moving from Alaska to Nashville, that great trek that you finally made, and how your career has blossomed since you hit Music City and all the things you've done. And you just have that great spirit. And music can really fuel people in such a positive way because it does cross across all barriers, ages, religions, political proclivities, whatever it may be, you know, it just speaks to the human condition in so many great ways. And if you have that generous spirit, which you do, obviously, on and off the stage, it certainly comes through. So congratulations for that, Doug. We really appreciate your efforts. I think a lot of people do. You've been getting all kinds of notice, I know, with your career. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to beyond this. Are you doing a lot of touring? You have a new album out now or coming out? Is that right?
Well, we've got Super Country Cowboy came out November 2013. It seems like it was just the other day, but it's actually been out just about a year and a half now. The third single on that is a Pretty Big Deal, and that's what's out right now from that album.
I'm going to hear that later.
Doing
mm-hmm.
real well with that, having a lot of fun. But yes, doing a lot of touring. I'm out on the road quite a bit. CMA Fest here in Nashville is this week coming up, and got a very busy schedule this weekend. It's going to be a phenomenal weekend for me, and it's one I'm a little bit intimidated by this weekend, what I got going on Sunday. It's a legend show benefiting cancer, and my band is playing for all these legends. I mean, we're talking Ronnie McDowell, Earlene Mandrell, Leona Williams, Ron Williams, Billy Yates, Buddy Jewell, T. Graham Brown, Lulu Roman, and the list is Bobby Bobby Lewis. The list just keeps going and going and going. I mean, it's a phenomenal lineup. And to be, part of that is great. Yeah, to be a part of that is great. And then to be the backing band for him is great. But, boy, it's an intimidating thing. Linda Davis, oh, my goodness, her songs are very difficult to play. But having a lot of fun with that, getting all those songs down. And we'll be doing that Sunday evening, and that starts at 6 o'clock at the Nashville Palace. Then all next week have several different shows that I'll be involved in, and at the CMA Convention Center there at the Nashville Universe booth, signing autographs and doing things. I'll be there pretty much every day. My official time is on Thursday there at the booth, but I'm actually there all day, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, so other than whenever I'm performing. So it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, you've really been busy. I remember when we first talked and you were making that, you know, that transition from Alaska to Nashville. You didn't really know what to expect. There was a little excitement, a little intimidation, but you went in there, you know, guns a-blazing, and really took the town by storm. You made all kinds of inroads, as you said. What were some of the biggest thrills for you and the people that you've worked with so far that you were pretty amazed that you got to connect with?
You know, last year during CMA Fest, I had the opportunity to perform with some of these people that I'm going to be performing and playing for this weekend, and that was a huge thing. To meet Lulu Roman firsthand and to have time with her, to meet some of these folks, Leona Williams, Ron Williams, Billy Yates, to meet some of these people was phenomenal. But, I think the biggest thrill for me since being here was doing a writer's night. I hosted a writer's night, and we did a writer's round. And I had Mark Allen Cash, Johnny Cash's nephew, is a friend of mine now, and had him in on that. And forget the Cash name. Forget who he is. He is a phenomenal artist in and by himself. And just to hear the stories firsthand of him growing up with his uncle and the things that took place. And, of course, his dad is Tommy Cash, and Tommy's had several number one hits over the years as well. And just to hear the rich history, I think that was the biggest thrill to me more than anything else, to really just hear some of that history. You sit there, Del Nora Reed was playing in that writer's round as well, and Del Nora's grandfather is the reason that there is a Fiddler's Hall of Fame, is comes from this background. And so to sit down with these two people that have this such rich heritage in the music, I think was the biggest thrill for me. Really, to just hear it firsthand, not reading it in a book, not watching it on TV, not watching it in a movie, but to hear it and their memories of when their eyes light up laughing about, you know, a particular story, and then their eyes tear up whenever they're talking about another story, you know, remembering and different things. And just that thrill, I can't replace that, and I can't even describe it.
You're immersed.
That's the biggest thing.
You're like immersed in history. And right in that town, which, you know, is so inviting for people who are songwriters and musicians, right? I mean, there's so many of you there, but it seems like people are embraced.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you went there, you didn't really have that many connections while you were there, and you kind of made the rounds, and various people took you under their wings, and here you are. And that's pretty interesting and pretty phenomenal, and brave of you also for making that transition when you did make it at the point in your life when you made it. But it worked out for you, you know, and that's so cool.
Well, it's going well, and, I'm very excited and very happy that we made the move. It's still scary. There's still times, there's still times where it's very intimidating. This weekend, like I said, I'm intimidated this weekend. I mean, it just
you'll do fine, though. You know you will.
Yeah, in a good way. It's intimidating.
Yeah. There's a little fear is good, right? A little trepidation because it gets your juices going and you want to reach the next level, the next dream, the next. What else is on your list? I mean, now that you've conquered part of it, what else is on your list to do, and who else do you want to maybe work with, collaborate with?
You know, the biggest goal that I have, honestly, and I, every country musician, I think it's part of their goal. The biggest goal that I have and I'm working towards is to be able to play the opera stage. That's a goal of mine. And there may not be that many. A lot of younger country artists don't maybe have that as a goal, but for me, it's a huge goal. And to be able to play that stage and to stand in that circle would mean an awful lot to me. So that's one that I am working towards, and I'm working hard to get there on that.
Now, what does it take to do that?
A person that I would love to play with? I wish I knew the answer to that. If I knew the answer to that, I'd be there.
Right.
It is an invite. It is an invite.
Right.
And just the right person has to hear you and say, hey, and make that recommendations to the people that are there. I don't know beyond that. It's an invite only, and it's attracting the right attention, building those relationships with the right people. Either that or else having a number one Billboard chart, a charted song, and then you can make the call and say, hey, I'd like to come on. Yeah.
Right. You'll make inroads this weekend, I'm sure, with little great people you're brushing up against, so that'll help.
That's exactly one of the, in all honesty, that's one of the things that I'm hoping for is that will help to open one more door that will lead me towards that goal. I'm just thrilled to be playing the show. I play the show even without that, but that is, that is one of the goals of this weekend. Mm-hmm.
So we were going to talk a little bit about who else would you like to collaborate with? I cut you off, so.
No, that's all right. I talk a long time. I'm long-winded. The dream person that I would love to do duet with is Jennifer Nettles.
From Sugarland.
She would be my dream duet.
She's got a great consummate country voice, doesn't she? She's got a great voice, yeah.
She does, and the reason that I'm so attracted to wanting to do a duet with her, every time she's done duets with, a lot of different people. I mean, from Lionel Richie to Bon Jovi to, other country artists and everything else, she's done it. Every time I've ever seen her do a duet, in my mind, she seems to bring more out of the artist that she's performing with than I think they even know they have.
That's a great.
And I would love to perform with her and see just how much Doug Briney could pull out. Because I think she would pull it all out of there.
Yeah, terrific. Well, there's a goal. I can see that. That would be a great duet for you to do. Work with her. Well, work towards that. Maybe you'll see her this weekend. You'll see. You never know, right?
Oh man. I would love to be able to do that, and who knows? One of these days, it may happen.
And absolutely.
I'm certainly working toward that. Yeah, I'm certainly working towards it. So, yeah.
A lot of your dreams have come true since you moved. I mean, are there any regrets? Has the family taken to Nashville as much as you have? Everybody happy? Any misgivings about leaving the Great Alaska wilderness behind?
Not misgivings, not regrets. I just was emailing a gentleman from Alaska, Bill Sherwinett. He is a author, very well known author up in Alaska, and has written several books and has done very well. I was just talking with him the other day, and I said, that although we're happy here and everything else, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think of Alaska. There's not a day that, after 21 years, that was home. And while Nashville is where we are at right now, we're still, I don't want to say our hearts are still in Alaska, but our hearts are still in Alaska. as far as, you know, that we had so much invested there. And it doesn't mean that we're not happy with where we're at. But there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about someone or something that took place over there. You know, and that's a normal thing. I think you invest that much time anywhere, it takes a little while to acclimate and to get and build those things. And we're doing it. I mean, so there's no regrets. There are no regrets. There's a lot of Alaska that we miss. Yeah, there's a lot of Alaska that we miss.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, how can you not? Like you said, how can you not? Because you lived there for so long. And but you definitely seem to be acclimating quite well to Music City and making all the inroads that you need to make to move on with your career, which, you know, was a pretty brave thing to do because you weren't 20 years old when you did it. So, you know, for people who listen to our show who are aspiring artists in one venue or another, and sometimes people think, oh, it's too late to, you know, go for my dream, what do you say to that? You say you really, you know, obviously you have to be realistic about it because if you have certain commitments and certain obligations, you can't just throw those away. But what's your advice to someone who sort of says, I want to go for it, but I'm tentative?
You know, that's a great question. I guess I would have to answer that on an individual basis. But, if you feel that you really have the talent and the God-given talent to do it, if you really have the desire to do it, then you need to do it. I don't want to ever live my life with regrets. I don't want to regret and say, you know, I had an opportunity and I missed it. And I've taught that to all four of my children. And doesn't mean that we do stupid things. We don't do stupid things on a whim, but take risks. If that's your passion, if that's your dream, and you believe that you have it, you need to take that risk. Don't be. Why are we so afraid of failing? You know, what is it that we're so afraid of? What is it that we're so afraid of in failing? And I think of some of the greatest inventors and some of the people who are the most thought of as successful in all human history. How many failures did they have? And if they hadn't taken those risks and if they hadn't taken those chances, where would we be? And so, you know, if you're not going to take the chance, then stop talking about it and stop dreaming about it. If you can't stop talking about it and if you cannot stop dreaming about it, then get off your butt and do it.
Exactly. That's great advice. No, I think you're so right. Do it. But, you know, and as you said, be reasonable about it. I mean, clearly some people just dream, it would be great if I could be a famous singer, but if you can't, you know, carry a tune, maybe that's not your dream that you should be pursuing. I mean, you do want to be realistic about what your talents are, and you have to have the desire there, too, because there are plenty of people who have great talent, but they don't really have the perseverance or the drive to go after it, and you need that, because in the success cocktail, I think, you know, talent is one component. Luck is another component, and perseverance is probably tenacity is probably the biggest component. You got to really chase it, and you got to work it, and you got to keep at it. Yeah.
It is absolutely one of the largest components. You got to stay with it. Don't give up. Understand, no is going to come your way way more than yes is when you're first starting off. But you just keep going. You know, if you're 5'1", and you want to be an NBA player, you might need to reevaluate that.
Yeah,
but
right.
You know what? Hey, there has been some very five footers in the NBA that overcame that vertical challenge and were some very successful players as well. So I'm not going to tell anyone they can't do it. But it, you know, the perseverance that the 5'1" player had to endure as opposed to, you know, the 7'2" players that they're already airborne.
Well, I don't know about 5'1",
you know,
maybe 5'8", 5'10", but you never know.
Well,
that's true.
I think there was a player who was 5'4", if I remember. There was an NBA player, I believe, was 5'4",
maybe.
He had a vertical jump of something. He had a vertical jump of something like 5 foot. I mean, I don't follow it, but it seems like I remember reading a story about that.
You may be right. I don't know. I don't follow that closely either. But there you go. So he obviously compensated and had this other talent to, you know, spring himself up beyond. So you never know what kind of talents you might have. But so you do have to be realistic, obviously, at some point to face what your natural gifts. But nurturing those gifts, whatever they may be. I mean, most people who are really successful
right.
will tell you that they had to work at it. It's not just a natural talent, because even if you have that natural talent, you
That's
have to
right.
own it. You have to work it, and whatever that may be, who knows? I mean, you can't really define it. Nobody knows for sure who has more talent than somebody else. It's just you have the talent. You seem to have the talent, but you have to cultivate it, I think, is the key. If you want it enough, I think
you
that's part of it. If you want it enough, you have to want enough.
That,
and you have to be willing
right.
to put yourself
that's
through.
Things, yeah, that's one of the things that I tell people all the time. Listen, if you want to do this, the first thing that you need to do is you need to hone your craft. Whether you're a guitar player, whether you're a bass player, whether you're a vocalist, whether you are a harmonic player, I don't care what it is, you need to hone your craft. Become the very best. Very, very best that you can be in whatever it is that you're doing. Hone that skill. Keep working on it. If you're a vocalist, take lessons. Get some vocal coaching. Honest evaluation of yourself. Don't just ask grandma and mom and dad, you know, how do they do? Get honest evaluation from someone who's a non-interested party. And then, you know, I film myself on occasion, and I am my own worst critic. You know, what did I do that really worked? What did I do that, man, I wish I had changed that? I need to work on this. And, you know, so you evaluate, you hone those skills to the best that you can. And then, like you said, you just stick with it, and you keep knocking on doors, and you keep knocking on doors, and eventually all those no's will start turning into yeses. And then it won't be long till people are knocking on your door instead of you having to go out.
And that's when you know you've arrived.
You have to cultivate.
Right.
Yeah, you have to cultivate your skill. You have to work on it. You can't just say, well, you know, I'm God's gift to the world. Man, if you think that, you got a long way to go. That you need to come down to Nashville. You need to come down to Music City and listen
to
some of these people that are here.
Yeah,
listen to some of the talent that is in this town, and realize that hey, there's some phenomenal talent in this town that you're never going to hear on the radio. You're never going to hear that, and these people are incredible.
Let's talk a little bit. It's interesting because there are so many people who are musicians there. People gravitate for obvious reasons to Music City, and we were saying before how people embrace each other, it seems. But what about the competition? Is there also a level of competition that's kind of daunting, or is it just one big love fest?
Among the musicians, I have not personally run into. A musician that has snubbed me here. The musicians and the writers here are very willing to collaborate and very willing to work together. I haven't run into anybody snubbing anything. Love fest is the right word, but there is a real spirit of camaraderie. There's a real spirit of wanting, working together and supporting one another as musicians. And part of that is this: you might be singing for someone or with someone. You never ever know here who is going to make it. You have no idea mm-hmm. who's going to make it. So you and that's a connection that you may have. You know, 5 years down the road, someone may say, "Hey, you know what? I played with this guy once before. He is really good. Why don't we get him to open up?" And that may be the break that you get. So the collaboration among musicians and writers in this town is phenomenal. I don't know that I'd call it a love fest, but there's a spirit of cooperation and wanting the others to succeed, because if they succeed, that helps you. It really does. By the way, at 5'3", Muggsy Bogues is the shortest NBA player.
There you go. Wow. You looked it up, huh? This is a view.
I did. 5'3". It was bugging me. I was thinking it was 5'4" or something, but yeah, Muggsy Bogues, the short
NBA
player.
When was he
Sorry
in the NBA?
About that.
Did they say when he was in there?
I didn't see that.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Didn't
though.
See
all
that.
Right.
Manute Bull at 7'7" is the tallest.
Okay.
And I don't know how to pronounce his name. George Marison are the tallest players at 7'7", and at 5'3", Muggsy Bogues is the shortest.
Wow, 5'3".
So, yeah.
So, yeah, you talk about desire and compensation of some sort there, yeah. Great, cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. It's the beauty of Google.
Sorry about that.
Googling
I had to look that up.
It was bugging. It's bugging you. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, you know, it's so great. And I think music, as we said before, bridges so many gaps. And I think if you're a musician and if you're good at it, I mean, I always say I'd like to come back as a singer-songwriter. I just have to not sound like Lucy Ricardo in my next life. But, yeah. You know, there's something great about the spirits of so much music brings out in people, and it makes a lot of people feel good all across. You know, you definitely can cross all those lines and break down walls, and it does so much for so many people, and that's why not all musicians are there are some ornery characters, but a lot of them are very friendly and generous. I think about, you know, John Mellencamp, cops to being ornery, but
yeah, and for the most
probably
part,
has a generous
for the
spirit
most
too,
part, though. The ornery ones. Yeah, the honorary ones, and they're the ones that people don't want to work with and they don't want to do things with because it's no fun to be around them. The musicians that I know and the musicians that I'm around, they like to have fun. They enjoy what they do. They love what they do, and they're passionate about it. And when you're around someone who's grouchy and takes all the fun out of it, and I'm not going to say a name, but I had a drummer that it was no fun to be around him in rehearsals. It was no fun to play with him because he was just, he was grouchy all the time. And I had to let him go. It just took the whole fun out of the entire band. No one was having fun. And where we want to be the best we could be, and I understand and I appreciated his dedication to being the best that we could be. There's a way to get the best out that you can still have fun, and he lost sight of that. So we had to let him go because it was bringing the whole band down. We got a different drummer, and the entire demeanor of the band and the energy and our performances and everything, just it was an instant, and I mean instant change, and it was so much more fun.
Yeah, well, you got to have fun along the way. Now, what happened to that guy, though? Did he learn anything from the experience? I mean, did you explain to him? Because you're a nice guy. You probably sat him down a couple of times, I'm guessing, along the way and said, hey, listen, we got to work on this. Is it in him to make those changes, or do you think he's just going to have a tough time all the way down the road?
I think, personally, he's going to have a tough time all the way down the road. There's some things that I found out afterwards, medical issues that I did not know when he started with this. That is going to prevent him, I think, from ever understanding that completely. I found out, and I don't want to get into it too much, but I found out that he does have bipolarism, and I did not know that at the beginning, you know. But after the fact, found out there's some bipolarism there, and that contributed heavily to his mood swings and the way he did things. And he clinically is bipolar. That's not just me diagnosing. He is clinically diagnosed that. So I don't think that will ever change for him.
He could get treatment, though, and be able to control it, hopefully,
He's had a measure of success. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's had a measure of success with the group that he hangs around with and he's happy there. He's happy there, and that's fine. I wasn't happy at that level. That's not why I moved to Nashville. I moved to Nashville. We moved here to have a larger measure of success, and I needed a different person to get me there. We had sat down and talked about things a number of different times. Trying to help him through and trying to work with him, but it just came to the point where we just couldn't do it.
It doesn't always work out, and that's tricky. Those relationships are tricky in bands, as in all collaborations. You know, you have to have all the personalities and all the parts have to fit together. But you're doing it. You've gotten that measure of success, and it keeps growing for you, and you continue your great, generous charitable efforts as well. Doug Brawny, always a pleasure. I love it when you come by and talk with us because you have some great insights and a great spirit. I know we're going to leave with another one of your songs. This is your latest single, by the way. Give us a setup for Pretty Big Deal. What's the backdrop of the story?
Pretty Big Deal is a song about being a dad to four great kids. I do have four children, proud of all of them, and I don't want to go back, but there's something about the innocence of a three- and four-year-old when mom and dad knew everything, and that's exactly what this song is all about. And Amy, thank you so much for having me on, and to the listeners out there, thank you so much for your support. I say this all the time, but I mean it. Without y'all, I might as well just be singing in the shower. So thank you for your support, and please head over to my webpage, and you can purchase the song Parkinson's Song there, and all of the proceeds go directly to the National Parkinson's Foundation.
That's so great. What a generous spirit. DougBriney.com is the website. We'll post it after the show as well. Doug, thank you. Always a pleasure. I hope you come back and see us again. This is a great little early Father's Day gift. Pretty Big Deal. Doug Briney on the Amy Guthrie Show. Thanks, Doug. Take care.
In my own.
Show. That's our guest Doug Briney's dream duet partner, and I can see how they could go together well. What a fabulous goal, Doug. You'll get there. And, of course, Doug Briney and his latest single, Pretty Big Deal, indeed. Find out more about Doug Briney at his website, DougBriney.com, including your chance to purchase Parkinson's Song, which will go directly to proceeds to help benefit Parkinson's disease. Very cool, indeed. And his tour dates are there as well. So all those details. We'll post all the links after the show is over, of course. Give us a call, 347-857-4505, if you're listening live on Friday, June 5th. If not, you can, of course, always go over to the Twitter feed at AB Writes, or do that anyway. So many folks do like to chime in via social media. And we have somebody, Selma, chiming in. Another great interview. You have a great way with your guest. Doug sounds like a very big-hearted guy. Like his music. Well, check it out, Selma. I think you'll enjoy. And Mark says, yeah, I really like the interview, and I like the country tunes. Play more. We will. We are. Indeed. Also, Free Flow Pop Culture Convo, the big story, of course, the fallout from the Duggars interview. We've been talking about this all over social media the last few days, and it's a confounding story on so many levels, and I don't want to lose sight of the fact that the other side of this story is that how come we know this story at all? A lot of people who are supporting the Duggars particularly, but other people as well who are concerned about victims' rights, believe that this story never should have been leaked. It's true, they did not name the victims. The story was redacted in the so-called police report, which is still complicated to me how it all happened. It was foiled by somebody. Somebody said it was the Oprah Winfrey Show a few years ago, and then somebody else leaked it. I'm not sure exactly, to be honest with you, how that happened. But what I do know is there's a weird law in Arkansas, apparently. I saw a lawyer describing this the other day on a cable show, that if the report filed doesn't contain actual charges or convictions, it is open to the public. In other words, it's a juvenile record because Josh Duggar was a teenager at the time when they reported this offense. But no charges were pursued and no conviction occurred in this case or any kind of remanding to social services or therapy or anything else by the courts. So according to the law, in that case, if it did happen, if he had a conviction, it would have been sealed. But because there was no conviction, it can be foiled. I do not know how to get my head around that, frankly. But laws are sometimes strange, as we all know, throughout the country. So there you have it. That doesn't mean it's morally right, and I understand people are concerned about that. And frankly, I am too. I mean, the second part of the interview will feature the daughters, I guess two of whom were victimized by their brother, and from the clips seem to have forgiven him, etc. That airs tonight on Fox, in case you're interested. But I have to say, unfortunately, whether it should have been released or not, there's no getting that creepy, perverted genie back in the bottle, if you know what I mean. So it's sad, I guess, that it is out there, but it is out there. And as a culture, we can have a conversation equivalent to walking and chewing gum at the same time. Not that I'd advise it on the radio, because then I would it would be chaotic to do either of those things. But you know what I'm saying. We could talk about how it is unfair to these girls to re-victimize them in exposing the story. But we can also talk about the fact the story is out there and what this man, when he was a kid, did and wasn't really held accountable, what his parents did, etc. Now, in watching the interview, I have to say there were a few things that came out that indicated the parents tried to do certain things correctly. They did more than I thought they did when I first heard about the story. I mean, they did actually report it to the police, kind of, after the fact. Which, I don't know, if you're a parent with a child who does this, do you want to report them? I mean, I think there's the natural inclination as parents is to protect your children. And they had a very, not quite Sophie's Choice, but a very serious choice on their hands between protecting their daughters and protecting their son. So, you know, I can't completely blame them. They tried. They did send him to some kind of counseling eventually, although it was a Christian counseling, not through their church, not licensed therapy. It took a while to get there. He had to confess a few times to doing it, and he apparently did it repeatedly. And that's kind of distressing and disturbing. They took some precautions. They locked the doors, et cetera. But still, you have to wonder what's what there in terms of their own sense of, you know, right, wrong, and just the therapeutic idea of it all. In the interview, I will say what is most disturbing to me was how minimizing they were, how much they kind of whitewashed. Oh, it wasn't rape. It was really touching over the covers, a little bit under the covers, and the girls were always asleep, so the girls didn't even know about it. Well, that's like saying Bill Cosby's alleged victims were assaulted while they were asleep. So does it count? I mean, first of all, we don't really know if they really were asleep or not, but it doesn't matter whether they were asleep or not. I mean, that's a grave violation any which way the victim may be. But there were other victims that I've seen come out, nothing to do with this case, who would say that they were molested as a child and they would pretend to be asleep when it happened. So we don't know if they blocked it out, if they were trying to block it out, if they're just covering for him anyway. But being asleep doesn't exonerate him from culpability. And the fact that it was so compulsive, it seemed almost pathological because he did it repeatedly over and over again. So to minimize it as experimentation, curiosity, no, I just don't think you can do that. I think it's not... It's much more than that, and there's some disturbing questions about him now as a 27-year-old man with three children and counting, because that's what they do. They just have kids. And is he? Are there his own children safe with him? Because this behavior seems to be pathological, and it isn't easily overcome or treated even when treatment is sought, which, again, I don't want to throw him on a swamp heap and say there's no redemption for this guy and no cure, because who knows? And you have a lot of these pop psych hucksters who go on TV and they diagnose and offer prognoses when they really don't know the case, because you don't know the person if you haven't examined or interviewed or worked with, et cetera, and I get that. So I would never say that. But they also tried to minimize. They said, oh, well, most kids who do it at a young age, 85 to 90% will never reoffend. I don't know where they got those stats, because I'd always heard otherwise, and I heard a very reputable psychologist say it's really the reverse. Most people do reoffend because it's just a tough problem to overcome, and it really is a psychological problem. It's not just a behavioral problem. It's not just making a series of bad choices, as they try to whitewash and say that. So I saw a lot of whitewashing. I saw a lot of minimizing, a lot of protecting their own brand, so to speak. I mean, why? I think the question was put to them at least once. You knew about this. It was wrapped up shortly before you signed on to do the reality show. Why would you want to subject yourself and your family to this reality show, knowing all of this background? And their attitude was like, well, it was all said and done, and he was fine by then, and we didn't think it would ever get out. Well, unfortunately, it got out, and now they still want to cling to the show. Now, we don't know if TLC is going to pull it or not. I suspect they will. It hasn't been formally announced, as far as I know, yet. It's off for now, but I don't see how they can resume it. It doesn't make sense to me, but who knows in the reality world what they're going to do and what they think they can exploit and if they think people really want to see it. But I would say no. You don't want to expose your daughters to any more re-victimization, any more exposure. Maybe just get these people off, get off the air. What is this need for people, this narcissistic need to gravitate towards reality TV for the fame and the money that comes with it? You know, who needs it? And certainly with people who are so religious and living in a very insular community, or had lived in a very insular life before the TV show brought them a certain degree of fame and, I guess, fortune. I really didn't know too much about this family. I heard of the show. I never saw it before. I haven't seen it since. I haven't seen it at all. But I know the concept. I have some distasteful feelings about their religion and just the way they use it. Again, I think people can practice whatever religion they want to practice. I'm not condemning them for that, but they use their own religious beliefs as weapons against other people, and that's why they're getting a lot of judgment as a backlash at this point, because Josh Duggar, as a grown man, worked for the Family Research Council until recently when they went their separate ways after the scandal broke, and was someone who was very vocal about condemning gay marriage. His mother, Michelle Duggar, did a series of robocalls to try to put the kibosh on a LGBT welcoming ordinance in their area. She has got the stance about transgender women coming into public bathrooms and how that would be a horrible thing for young girls to witness, because she believes that transgender people are basically just pedophiles pretending to be women. I don't get it. Again, this is such ignorance that it's hard to really wrap your head around it. And they stood by that concept by saying it's just common sense to try to protect children, even though your son was the one who was being a predator in your house. And they wanted to argue over this semantics that the son isn't really a pedophile because he was 15 and you have to be 16 to be officially a pedophile. I don't know. Ugliness ensues. A lot of people are very vocal about it. I know you've been chiming in because we've been talking about it all week on the last few days anyway, on social media. Sarah Palin chimed in, I understand. She's upset. She says the hypocrisy of the liberal media to give a pass to some people like Lena Dunham, who I guess, you know, there was a kerfuffle about Lena Dunham some months back when she wrote in her book that she had fondled her sister. I'm not sure how many times she did it. I'm not sure if they were closer in age than Josh was when he was 15 and repeatedly molested his five-year-old sister. There is a difference. I mean, little kids sometimes experiment with each other. I don't know. I'm not giving her a pass. She took a lot of heat, actually, when it happened. That's what I'm saying. I think what is hypocritical, and this is true on any side, I don't care what the politics is, you have to call it out. I mean, that's why I say in politics, if I'm saying I'm a liberal Democrat, but Hillary Clinton does something unethical, I'm calling her out on it. I don't think it's right to just whitewash and cover up. So that's just not right. Same thing here. I don't think it's right to have politicians who support them like Mike Huckabee and say, and minimize it. Oh, he did a bad thing, but he apologized. Nice people make mistakes. It's not a mistake. It's a pathology. I think there's a sickness here. So maybe you should not, we're not talking about putting him in jail and throwing away the key. We're talking about making sure that he gets the proper treatment. And I'm not sure he ever did. That's depression. And the girls probably need some serious therapy, too. And we're not talking about just a quick brush over with the Christian Counseling Center. As well-meaning as that may be, I'm not so sure that's going to be enough for these people. And that's the key. That's the key. All right, at the Twitter feed, Ashley says, it's sickening denial. They need to rethink their side hugs. I'm not sure what that is, but okay. Duggars are gone, long gone. The show should be over. Let them stop talking. This is Jolene. Kelly says, can the Duggars go away now? They're an awfully hateful family for people who claim to forgive everyone. See, this is what I'm saying. People are upset about the fact that they're intolerant to so many people, but they want forgiveness for themselves. Very hypocritical, if you ask me. What else do we have here? Dear Fox News, so says Political Piggy, Megyn Kelly says molestation reports obtained illegally, meaning legal except Duggars are not liberal. Okay. I don't know what that means. The point is they're saying that somebody forced their hand, got the report, and it was, I think, what they were claiming in their interview, and there may be some truth to this, that there's an agenda against them. And that there were some people that were trying to out them and out to get them. And I'm not saying that's not true. And as I said, I think it is the other side of the story that we have to address, even if we find what Josh Duggar did abhorrent. We have to say that it isn't right for these young girls, who are now young women, to have been exposed and re-victimized again. Because that's just not right. I agree with that. But the point is the story's out there now, and you can't pretend it didn't happen because it wasn't supposed to be leaked, so let's pretend it didn't happen and we won't talk about it at all. I mean, unfortunately, that's not the way the world works, so we can't do that. Joe says police were obligated to release the Duggar incident reports. Redacted names were disclosed in their interview. Well, no, that's not true. I don't think that's true. To be fair, they redacted it, but they gave the ages. So I guess people who are familiar with the family, if you watch the show, I don't know anything about these people, so I don't know, but I guess if you watch the show, you can tell by the ages who's who. I mean, it's 19 and counting, but when it happened, it was less kids. It might have been 6 and counting or whatever, so you could figure it out by process of elimination. So I understand that, and I think it is something that we should address, but it's a separate part of it, and it doesn't mean that we can toss the other part down the heap and say we're not going to ever discuss it again because this was obtained illegally or whatever. Got some colorful language on the feed, too. Remember, I can't read some of these. Sorry, I know it's a podcast, but I still can't read some of these. Mike says, why does anyone care what Sarah Palin has to say? Are the Palins just trying to stay relevant? Well, of course. That is what Sarah Palin does. She tries to stay relevant, of course. Reach out your view at AB Wright's phone line, 347-857-4505. What can you do? It's a tough story indeed. I think it's going to be hard to watch the girls, though. I saw the little clip, or the young women now, reflect on their childhood. I don't know if I can take the whole thing, but I may watch it. I may watch it because the family frustrated the heck out of me. I felt for them on some level, for sure. But I think they minimized way too much, and maybe they're still in denial, and they just want that looking good family to be true. But if it's not, you got to deal with it. Let's get back to the music on our Kickin' Country Friday. This is another one of Doug Briney's idols, and I certainly have been a fan since he broke out big time. A national star, I'm talking about the great Buddy Jewell, and a great song called his big hit, Lacey's Song, Help Pour Out the Rain.
The moment was custom made to order. I was riding with my daughter on our way back from Monroe. And like children do, she started playing 20 questions. But I never would have guessed one could touch me to my soul. She said, Daddy, when we get to heaven, can I taste the Milky Way? Are we going there to visit, or are we going there to stay? Am I going to see my grandpa? Can I have a pair of wings? And do you think that God could use another angel to help pour out the rain? La da 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 do. Well, I won't lie, I pulled that car right over, and I sat there on the shoulder, trying to dry my misty eyes. And I whispered, Lord, I want to thank you for my children, cause your innocence that fills them often takes me by surprise. Like Daddy, when we get to heaven, can I taste the Milky Way? Are we going there to visit, or are we going there to stay? Am I gonna see my grandpa? Can I have a pair of wings? And do you think that God could use another angel to help pour out the rain? Well, I thought about it later on, and a smile came to my face. And when I tucked her into bed, I got down on my knees and prayed. Lord, when I get to heaven, can I taste the Milky Way? I don't want to come to visit, cause I'm coming home to stay. And I can't wait see my family and meet Jesus face to face. And do you think, Lord, you could use another angel to help pour out the rain? Can I help pour out the rain? Can I help pour out the rain? La da 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 dee 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 dee.
Just like a queen, three on a tree. We are just pleased as punch to have you aboard.
Carlene was valedictorian. I was quarterback in the back.
Phil Vassar with the country edition of songs, Texas songs we can't help but like despite our advanced cultural sensibilities. Carlene, great song, but really the gist of it is she exceeded expectations because she turned out to be a beauty, not because of her brains or anything else. Still a good song. Classic from Dolly Parton, Here You Come Again, and Country Marrieds, Blake Shelton, his big breakout hit, oh, I guess about 10 years or more, right? Austin. And his wife, Miranda Lambert, Automatic. I love that song. She's the biggest star to come out of the Nashville Star talent show franchise. Although she only came in third. Buddy Jewell. That was the year that Buddy Jewell won the whole darn crown, the first year they had the show. Big breakout star after toiling. He was already in his 40s. And his big breakout song, Help Pour Out the Rain, Lacey song. Buddy's still a staple on the country and gospel circuit. In fact, I think Trudy Hart, our producer, is working on trying to get him on the show. We'll see. Speaking of great guests, don't forget next Friday, it's Brett Butler Day. The iconic, irreverent star and comedian will be with us. If you can't make it live, but you have some questions or comments, you can do so via Twitter at AB Writes, hashtag Brett Butler, or the website, amybetharkowy.com. Brett Butler here live next Friday at noon Eastern Time, and thereafter after on podcast, of course. This one should be fabulous, as they all are. We enjoyed Doug Briney so much today, too, and we'll post his information as we go. So big day yesterday in the hijinks on the campaign trail. Rick Perry, the former Texas governor, known for his oops moment on the debate stage, back in the race, wearing glasses and claiming to be more serious this time around. The one thing that I find very intriguing, though, is the media is not mentioning the fact that his big stumbling block this time might be the fact that he's running under indictment. Now, most people believe it's a political kind of deal and it's frivolous and it will be dismissed, but it hasn't been, as far as I know. So that's kind of a cloud. Even if it's a minor problem, it's got to go away before he can really run in full force, I would think. We'll see. The other thing, Hillary Clinton gave a big speech yesterday, also in Texas, no coincidence, I suspect, on voter registration and the idea that it should become automatic when you turn 18 if you're a citizen, and I think that's a great idea. The Republicans have been trying to suppress the vote for years because they know the tide is turning against them, and the only way they can win is to keep people from voting. And that, to me, is the biggest unpatriotic thing you can do. I don't care how you vote. If you have a right to vote, your voice has a right to be heard, and it shouldn't make it so difficult with this so-called manufactured voter fraud, which doesn't really exist. That's what she was talking about. She did it forcefully. She called out some names of her opponents, like Rick Perry, Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and Jeb Bush in Florida. Jeb, by the way, has his own little problems with his campaign, non-campaign shenanigans, raising as much money as he can, claiming he's not running, but he is running, and I hope I'm going to run, all that kind of nonsense. Some people want a federal probe to investigate his shenanigans, don't think it'll happen. He did, in fact, Bigfoot his Republican colleague Rick Perry yesterday by announcing that he will formally announce on June 15th. And by the way, Donald Trump is supposed to announce on June 16th. Ouch. This is getting crazy, right? Indeed. Hey, weigh in anything and everything. Little time left here. 347-857-4505. Twitter feed, too, at AB Writes. Inspiration to Action Challenge Success Story shout-out going out to Candy in Minnesota, working on some children's stories and thinking about a novel. Thanks for getting me going. Short but sweet, Candy. Appreciate it. Hey, if it's working for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out. Reach out to the website, amybetharkowy.com. Stop by there, too, if you're having a little trouble, and we can start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one, always on me. Here's an old story. Oh, it's about 2 days old now. It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. Classic from Bobby Gentry.
Was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, well, Billy Joe never had a lick of sense. Pass the biscuits, please. There's 5 more acres in the lower 40 I got to plow. was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Brother said he recollected when he and Tom and Billy Joe put a frog down my back at the Carroll County Picture Show. And wasn't I talking to him at the church last Sunday night? I'll have another piece of apple pie. You know it don't seem right. I saw him at the sawmill yesterday on Choctaw. Now you tell me Billy Joe's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Mama said to me, child, what happened to your appetite? Well, I've been cooking all morning and you haven't touched a single bite. That nice young preacher, Brother Taylor, dropped by today. Said he'd be pleased to have dinner on Sunday. Oh, by the way, he said he saw a girl that looked a lot like you up on Choctaw Ridge. And she and Billy Joe was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge. A year has come and gone since we heard the news about Billy Joe. Brother married Becky Thompson. They bought a store in Tupelo. There was a virus going round. Papa caught it and he died last spring. And now Mama doesn't seem to want to do much of anything. And me, I spend a lot of time picking flowers up on Choctaw. Drop them into the muddy water off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Ah, the intrigue.
We now join America's most popular show already in progress.
Well, I make it all right.
Well, I make it all right.
Monday morning to Friday night.
Oh,
lonely weekend. Since you left me, I'm as lonely as I can be.
Oh, lonely weekend.
Said you'd be Friday.
much on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show and the classic from Bobby Gentry, Ode to Billy Joel. It is the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Hey, thanks so much for the Twitter feed comments. Donnie chiming in. Another great show. Love the interview, the commentary, and so much that music. Well, thank you, Donnie. Appreciate it. Nixie also, another great show. AB Boy, you know how to talk about great things and tie it all together with the tunes. Yeah, we try. We try, Nixie. We do. Appreciate it. We appreciate you tweeting with us in real time. Don't forget, all the shows are archived for podcasts. Follow the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show at the Blog Talk Radio site. You can also download episodes there, iTunes, NetNow, and the website, amybetharkowitz.com. So let's do a little deja vu all over again. One more from Doug Briney before we leave.
They got the passports and flip-flops, that island cruise is long overdue. Her son's in the Navy, daughter Jen has a baby, now it's back to just them two. And the phone rings, it's Jen, she said I'd like to get my degree. If I get some loans, I move back home. It would sure help your grandson and me. Now it's hatches and diapers, Bonnie and friends. It's deja vu all over again. Cookie kisses and sticky hugs. Rubber duckies floating in the tub. Oatmeal in the baby's head. Tiny fingerprints everywhere. Back where they've already been. It's deja vu all over again. Deja vu all over again. Grandpa's Chrysler just sits set, except for Sunday church a mile away. He called and asked about Jen and the baby again at least three times yesterday. Where they stopped by last week, found his pipe burning the rug. He had fallen asleep while watching TV. They said, Dad, move in with us. Now it's lectures and reruns, tobacco tins. It's deja vu all over again. Elvis records and Ernest Tubbs. Old fish and stories and love you hugs. Archie Bunker easy chair. Flannel shirt smell everywhere. They're back where they've already been. Deja vu all over again. Deja vu all over again. Well, the sandwich generation caught between the young and old, but they don't mind putting their plans on hold. Now they're back where they've already been. Deja vu, deja vu, deja vu all over again.
Great one from Doug Briney, Deja Vu All Over Again. Find out more info about Doug Briney, his latest releases, and upcoming tour dates at DougBriney.com. Thanks, Doug. Always a pleasure having you on. Hey, thanks for the comments on the Twitter feed. Don't forget, you can follow the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show at the Blog Talk Radio site, the website, AmyBethArkowitz.com. All the shows are archived for podcast. Follow our producer, Trudy Hart, at Radio Trudy on Twitter, and, of course, our 24/7 Twitter feed at AB Writes. Chime in about anything and everything when it works for you. My weekend picks at the movie theaters, I'm looking forward to seeing Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson story. This one looks very intriguing. Got pretty good reviews, too. We'll have to see. On video, Love is Strange, a wonderful little indie film starring John Lithgow and Alfred Molina as two gay men who finally get married once it's legal in New York, only to find out they can't live together due to economic problems. Moving and funny in spots. I think you'll like that one. Check it out. And on Sunday night on TV, Broadway's Best gets its due on the Tony Awards. That's usually a great show, so check that out if you're so inclined. Indeed. We're almost ready, right?
Since you've all been such good boys and girls, I would like to take everybody in this entire audience out for milk and cookies. There are buses outside. Everybody, follow me.
That sounds like a fun way to wrap up a Friday. Hey, thanks so much for seeing us, Drew. Trudy and Aurora in the booth, ML at headquarters. Thank you so much for joining us. Have yourself a great weekend. Drive safe, play nice, dream big. Please come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. We'll leave you with one that we love to send out either way to our beloved New York Mets. When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not hot, you're hot. Take care.
Well, now me and Homer Jones and Big John Talley had a big crap game going back in the alley. And I kept rolling them seven and winning all them pots. My luck was so good, I could do no wrong. I just kept on rolling and controlling them bones. Finally, they just threw up their hand and said, when you hot, you hot. I said, yeah.
When you're hot, you're hot. And when you're not, you're not.
Behind me, I turned around and there was a big old cop. He said, hello, boys. Then he gave us a grin and said, look like I'm gonna have to haul y'all in and keep all that money for evidence. I said, well, son, when you hot, you hot.
He said, yeah, when you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not.
You can explain it all down at City Hall. I said, yeah,
when
you're hot, you're hot. Buddy that I recognize, I said, hey, Judge, old buddy, old pal, I'll pay you that $100 if you get me out of this spot. So he gave my friends a little fine to pay. He turned around and grinned at me and said, 90 days, Jerry, when you hot.
When you're hot, you're hot. When you're not, you're not.
You let my friends go free and sold the book.